Hello and welcome to the podcast from That's Not My Age. I'm Alison Walsh. I'm a journalist, author and blogger, and I'd like to invite you to join this conversation. I'll be interviewing lots of brilliant people about life and style and getting older. It's a grown-up guide. Hope you enjoy the episode. Today, we're in North London visiting the home of Dr. Carolyn Mair, a chartered psychologist and professor of psychology who has created her own consultancy and written a book on the psychology of fashion. Just for clarity, can you explain what exactly is the psychology of fashion?
Okay, well, psychology of fashion is about understanding behaviour, motivation for behaviour, our perception, our involvement with fashion right through the industry. So it includes design. So designing a fashion piece
It
is a psychological process.
Yeah.
But it also includes elements such as sustainability. So looking at how we can make the fashion industry more sustainable.
Yeah.
How can we help the fashion industry reduce their impact on environmental damage? How can we help consumers behave more socially responsible?
Yeah.
Because behaviour is psychological. It's also about what we wear, about our self and identity, how we show that through our clothes, how our clothes can influence how we feel, how we interpret other people. I'm not the first one to say that, actually. Stella McCartney said that.
Did she?
Yeah.
That needs to go on a T-shirt, doesn't it?
It does. When she was designing...
And the mount at your workshops.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. But it's when she was designing her clothes and she said it comes from her inside. And she said fashion is psychology.
It's true, isn't it? I think also, you're very modest, but you are a bit of a pioneer, aren't you? You have created, really, you know, the degree courses and, you know, really fashion psychology, which didn't exist before.
Mm.
So as it's quite a new subject and you've written a book about this, how was that? How was writing the book? Was that difficult? Because where did you focus your research?
It was quite difficult. It was difficult on... Well, that's difficult in itself, writing a book when you've got a full-time job and you're course leader as well of the two master's courses and also preparing the undergraduate program and, you know, supervising PhD students, all the other stuff that comes with working in academia.
Yeah.
So on a time management level, it was difficult. In terms of research, again, very difficult because from a psychological perspective, psychologists have ignored fashion as an area of research. So I had to look at psychological theories and apply them within the context of fashion, but also look at what fashion theorists and sociologists and anthropologists actually have looked at in terms of fashion and try to bring those together based on my purpose, I suppose, my mission for what I wanted to do when I created the courses, which was to try to help the fashion industry become more sustainable and more ethical.
And so that's quite a lot of information to take and distill and put into a very succinct book, isn't it? So do you still feel, because it's a new subject, and do you still feel like you've got a lot to learn?
Yeah, completely, all the time. And I think that's one thing that psychology training gives me, is that all we know is what we know from today. It might well be different tomorrow. So I always have an open mind. I love learning.
Yeah.
I'm certainly learning a lot about fashion, you know, about the fashion industry and about how fashion actually works, how it's far more than just clothes. You know, I'm learning a huge amount and, I think that's really important.
Yeah, I think as a journalist as well, it's that sort of thing. You're always learning, you're always... Like you said, keeping an open mind, you're sort of inquisitive.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So you've gone on to create your own business now and are giving workshops to people in industry, to sort of people in the creative industries. Does that feel like a natural progression from lecturing to move into that, to sort of spread? I kind of think from what you're saying, it's like to spread the word and kind of change industry from the inside, to sort of get in there and change attitudes.
Yeah, absolutely. The natural progression kind of happened because at LCF I would have meetings one after the other, after the other, after the other, with people from outside the university, for people from industry wanting to talk to me. And me being able to talk to them because I was in a position where I could do that, but not being able to really make change happen. And at some point I just felt that, you know, I want to take this further. I want new challenges. Some changes that I wanted to help with in the industry, I wasn't able to implement in a course structure because in academia, things take years. You have to jump through hoops and hurdles, and it takes a long, long time to make change happen. And I'm quite impatient. It was a considered move to give up a job, which I loved, which was my dream job, to think about, well, making a difference in a sensible time frame. I don't want to think in 10 years' time. Things are moving.
That's the thing, isn't it? I think setting up the courses, you're going to grassroots level there and you're kind of educating graduates and postgraduates, but it's that sort of, how do you change the way, you know, how do you sort of make a change to the fashion industry? So the workshop is a brilliant idea. And I think also you seem to hit a nerve or whatever. What would the psychological term be for hitting a nerve? I don't know. What would it be?
I think there's several factors. I think one is emotion. People feel very passionate about the fashion industry. Whether they just love fashion, they're passionate about it, making statements that help us with our well-being, with our mental health. So I think there's a lot of passion around fashion anyway, and that means that it's very salient to people. So it's not hard when people hear, initially, psychology and fashion, now it's people get it, but initially when I set out to create the courses, people were quite surprised at putting those two disciplines together. But it makes absolute sense.
It does to me. I kind of think, and also from, I've been to one of your workshops, and I think people were very willing to share their thoughts and experiences. It's quite interesting, isn't it? So that must be incredibly fulfilling for you to sort of create this forum.
It's been fantastic, and the workshops have been great. And I think what I found, not only from who say when they learn about psychology, they learn about themselves. And so what you were witnessing in the course of people sort of disclosing and talking about their own, maybe it's lack of confidence or their own confidence or their own understanding of how they feel in their clothes, disclosing that in a workshop situation was, I hope, valuable for them.
Because I do think fashion industry does get a bad rep, but dressing well and that kind of taking care of your appearance and what we wear can make us feel really confident. Why is what we wear so important?
It's really important what we wear. One, how we feel in what we're wearing is really important, because then that is what the outside world sees. So we show how we feel. It's shown on our faces, in our posture, but also what we wear can send signals to other people who are interacting with us or observing us, and then we reflect back their sort of views on us. It's part of our identity, so we show our identity.
How does fashion make you feel?
When I feel good in what I'm wearing, I feel great, without a doubt. It just picks me up completely. When I'm not feeling good in it, then I don't really want to interact with anyone. And I just want to go about my business and not be noticed. How it makes me feel, it can definitely lift me up. So if I have a special piece of clothing or some special clothes, I think, I'm going to wear that. It makes me feel great.
Yeah.
Then it will.
We spoke of having a lucky something that makes you feel lucky and makes you feel good. Because I've got a jacket, and it's a tuxedo jacket, and it's the one I wore for my first, the very first book signing. And so I kind of blew the budget a bit and bought a Celine tuxedo. And it's so beautiful and fits so well that it just sort of instantly kind of boosts your confidence and makes you feel good. All of a sudden, it's like this instant.
Absolutely.
Upgrade of everything, of how you feel about yourself and how you look and
And how people perceive you.
Yeah.
And that is then reflected back.
I was thinking that when I was sort of paying for it on my credit card, like, you know, I've just written a book about style. People do need to look at me and think I look stylish, or I know what I'm talking about.
That's the worst thing, isn't it? People always expect me to be looking amazing. I always tell people I'm not a stylist. So that's my excuse. I'm not at all.
Right, so I would like to talk to you a bit about fashion imagery and social, what we see in the media, but in particular what we see in social media and how that is impacting on society, particularly Instagram, I think, because it's so easy just to sort of scroll through and see all these different images of people. We're all kind of addicted to it, and I think quite a lot of importance is placed on Instagram, and we are constantly being bombarded with images, so we have become much more visual. And again, it comes back to what we look like, how we look, which is very retrograde, isn't it? That sort of judging people by how they look, it kind of feels very 1970s. And I do think that always comparing yourself to other people has a negative impact, and also kind of what you're seeing is not reality. You know, everything, you know, things are tweaked, aren't they? And you're just showing the very best part of your life. I mean, I'm guilty of that. Showing the best part of my life, not tweaking pictures, nothing is photoshopped. So, to talk a bit about that, how you feel that, you know, how people are, you know, because it's distorting reality, isn't it? And the impact that is having on people.
Very much. I mean, I'm new to Instagram, so yeah. I've only started using Instagram a couple of months ago. I'm hoping to use it more in future, but I have to say, when I've started using it, I am quite horrified at the accessibility, I suppose, the availability, the omnipresence of these images that are of, well, very, I'll use the word beautiful, and yet unattainable images of women that may or may not have been edited. I mean, I assume some of the women are truly stunningly amazing and beautiful. Who knows? Nevertheless, to just keep seeing these one after the other after the other on fashion sites has to be harmful for individuals who don't look like that, and that is 99% of the population, if not more than that. 99.9% of the population do not look like that. So despite all the movement towards representation of different body types, different skin tones, different skin textures, different ages, different abilities, I haven't seen any of that represented on my Instagram feeds. I suppose I could look at specific sites, but for me, that defeats the object, really.
Yeah.
If we're looking at representation, it has to be across the board. So if I want to look at fashion for people with different body types, let's say, or different body abilities, do I have to look at those specific, you know, Instagram feeds? For me, that's not a good place to be. It should be in general.
Yeah.
So I think it's harmful. It's not just my opinion on this. There is research that shows that even a very brief exposure to fashion imagery, people who have very brief exposure, so a matter of seconds, to fashion imagery, typical fashion imagery, see their body image worse than they did before. So they have lower body satisfaction.
Really?
There's research that shows that.
Well, I was just reading, we were just talking about this before, Catherine Ormerod's book, Why Social Media is Ruining Your Life, and that's got some statistics in there. And, you know, there's an app that I'd never heard of, because I don't, you know, I don't alter any of my pictures. I don't sort of, you know, use a filter to get rid of the wrinkles. That's what you see is what you get, basically. There's an app called Facetune that everyone is paying to use, apparently, that can kind of really...
Tune their faces.
Alter your face, like Photoshop you and make you look kind of like change everything. So, you know, if you don't like your nose, you can make it look completely different. Or if you want your legs to look longer, yeah, you can kind of do all this. And it was saying that using apps like that and sort of editing the images, always editing the pictures of yourself because you're not satisfied with how you look, how kind of you don't like your appearance. I mean, how.
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah.
But when you're faced with thousands of images that have used it,
yeah,
are you going to put up a picture that hasn't?
Yeah.
I mean, the problem is we do compare ourselves with other people. Yeah. That's quite a natural thing to do. So it's not like we shouldn't do it. We do it.
Yeah.
We make comparisons. In fact, everything is relative.
Yeah.
So even if we describe ourselves as short, it's in comparison to other people. So everything is a comparison with other people. The problem is when we're comparing ourselves with an unrealistic population, which is the imagery we see. And if everybody's using this app, which I'd never heard of before, it's massively problematic and it eats away at ourselves because we're never going to be satisfied with how we look. If it takes, I don't know, it might take seconds or minutes or hours, I don't know, to perfect our image, and then we actually catch a glimpse of our real selves, we're going to be really unhappy.
Yeah, it's terrible. There's another statistic in the book that was the amount of time that teenage girls are spending, you know, tweaking their images, and it was like 90 minutes a day or something like that. And you just say, oh god, that, you know, well, it's just not good, is it? It's terrible. I mean, what kind of like impact is that having on?
Oh, I think it's a real problem. You mentioned earlier being judged on our appearance.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have to accept that we are judged on our appearance because it's the first thing that, the first and the most salient sensory information that we get about a person. But what we need to understand is that appearance is a snapshot. What you're saying, it's not reality, this is not how we are. And so we need to sort of judge people much more on who they are rather than how they look. But I don't think people are using their time on Instagram or other social media.
Yeah.
I mean, there's hundreds of platforms that
I
don't even know about. Snapchat's another one. Just based on images that are edited, that don't look like the people who've posted them, that are just sort of living in a kind of pseudo-world.
And I think what is really odd is, I think we had women's magazines and were critical of them. I mean, my background is, I was a fashion editor on a magazine. But, you know, women's magazines were criticised for creating these unattainable images of women who were all slim and tall, Caucasian, that were photoshopped and tweaked. But now we've got Instagram and social media and we've kind of recreated that, but it's worse because it's sort of like so in your face.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's worse. The magazines had at least a lot of text, articles.
Yeah.
And depending on the magazine, some of them were really useful. They were quite often a feminist slant.
Yeah.
And you got that the fashion imagery was almost like a work of art. I can remember getting Vogue as a teenager. And even now, you could hardly see the clothes, but it was a beautiful photo.
And everything, Grace Coddington's work, and, you know, people like that.
It was amazing. And so the fashion magazines were something you could hold, and they kind of smelt nice. And they had the other sensory input. Yes, you looked at the images, but I believe you could separate out. And it wasn't one after the other after the other. There was text in there. It wasn't just images. And I know there's some text with Instagram, and the thing is now to write a few lines.
But on the positive side, I would say that social media has been great for, you know, I feel like I see lots more women who are, you know, I'm in my 50s, so I see older women, I see women with wrinkles and that aren't perfect and look a little bit like me. So in that respect, it is quite empowering. You know, and ageist attitudes are called out. And
yeah, absolutely. No, I totally agree with you there. So it has given a platform for all sorts of body types, yeah. ages, abilities to make their way. And lots of them have, and lots of either older, larger, you know, different types of fashion users yeah. have now got a presence online. But in the general feeds that I'm looking at yeah. from the brands, I'm not seeing them represented. I'm just
No. I mean, I think, well, I've been blogging for 10 years now, and then it's like I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, the whole lot. And I think attitudes are changing, and they have changed,
yeah.
but it's very slow. And then, yeah, then you see an ad campaign, you think, you know, that model's about 16. Yeah, yeah. The clothes are sort of aimed at me, but the model's yeah. really young, and the industry yeah. does still, you know, it's the young is beautiful yes. kind of way of thinking.
Exactly, exactly. And I think, I don't know when that's going to change. And I have seen, as you say, a change for older women
yeah.
In fashion, definitely, and which is great. So, you know, obviously I welcome that. But it's not enough.
Yeah.
It's like there's an older woman advertising skincare for older women. Well, yeah, that makes sense. But I want to see yeah. older women wearing Celine or
yeah,
wearing
yeah.
Chanel. Or the clothes that I wouldn't imagine many young people could have.
Yeah, I know, that's the conundrum, isn't it? That's the ridiculous thing. Yeah, you just want it to be kind of normal, like when you walk yeah. down the street and you see people that are all different ages, and
yes.
that's how the world is.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And that is how the world is, and all people wear fashion, or wear clothes, at
least. Yeah. Yeah, not just young people. Everyone of all ages is important. Okay, on that note, I'm going to move on to some very quick fire grown-up guide questions that I'm going to be asking everyone throughout this series of podcasts. So first one is, I'm exhausted, how tired are you?
Quite exhausted, but also energized.
Uh-huh.
So I really thrive on being busy.
Yeah.
So if I'm not busy, although I might not be exhausted, I might be a bit worried that I'm not busy.
Are you energised because of your workshop and your whole new career?
Yeah, I'm energised by the challenges, the new challenges of setting up a business, those that they present to me. I'm energised because we're having this conversation. Yeah, I find it very exciting, in a good and challenging
yeah,
way.
Yeah, yeah.
Every day is different.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. has challenges.
Right. How do you feel about getting older? As this is that's not my age, I have to ask that question.
Okay, so the alternative is a lot worse.
Yes.
Yeah, I won't pretend I don't look in the mirror and think, yeah, I looked a lot better. You know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. You know, I won't pretend I didn't. But I like being older in yeah. the sense that it gives me the confidence. It gives me confidence. I can really care less what other people... not what they think. I do care what people think, actually. But I'm more able to understand complex problems
yeah.
That are affecting everybody. Getting older is good as long as you keep your health.
That is the most important thing, isn't it? What are you reading right now?
Okay, well...
You're going to buy this book.
I'm definitely going to buy Why Social Media is Ruining Your Life. It sounds fantastic. I'm reading several books at once. As I mentioned, I've got quite a short attention span and I'm quite impatient. So I'm not too good at finishing books. So I pick them up, I start them, then I start another one.
I read before bedtime and yes. then just, like, when I get into bed, yeah. I start reading and, like, within, like, 5 minutes, I'm just sort of like, you know, my head's on the pillow, the book's yeah. on the floor.
Yes, I do that, but when I'm doing research, then I read typically for the research. Yeah. I don't really read fiction.
And, okay, what's your favourite food or drink or food and drink or both?
Ooh, drink I'm partial to. Fizz or good fit, champagne. Yeah. Or if it's not champagne, then Carver, I prefer to Prosecco.
Okay, so can you, as we are about style and talking about fashion, can you talk me through your outfit, what you're wearing today? Just very briefly.
Okay, well, I'm wearing a navy blue cashmere jumper from Uniqlo, which I've had a while, but it's light as a feather and very warm. And a pair of black jeans that I may or may not have got in a charity shop, can't remember.
And do you have a style signifier? Do you have like a signature look or a one thing that you always wear or you always come back to that you feel like you in?
Well, I've got a leather biker jacket that I would say was very much me. And I've also got a black leather t-shirt, which has got elbow length sleeves and a round neck, which I love.
That's quite good in winter for sort of layering
it's
up.
It's really warm. It's really, it's like boxy shape, and it's just perfect, I think. And so if I'm unsure what to wear to anything, I will always wear that. It looks nice with a jacket over, looks great with jeans or a pleated skirt.
More versatile than it you think, or than it sounds, a leather t-shirt.
Well, it came from a charity shop. So.
Oh, I like that. Win-win. We like charity shops.
Yeah, so do I.
And finally, what's the single most important piece of advice you've ever been given?
I would say if I was talking to my children, I would say, and what my mother said to me, get a profession. Which I
really?
Think
do you say that to your children?
To the girls in particular.
Yeah.
To the girls in particular, because I didn't say I would talk about my career, but I got divorced, you know, and you got three kids, you need to have a job and not be on contracts, short contracts.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any parents, both my parents died ages ago, so I didn't have anywhere to go with my three kids, and I would have left my husband long time before I actually did. I just didn't have anywhere to go, and I didn't have a career.
Yeah.
I had nothing. Okay, you know, I'm making clothes for people and painting portraits. I forgot about that bit. And doing murals, you know, and my portfolio career, which brought in money, but not regularly.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't have got a mortgage. I don't even know if I could have rented somewhere with the way my income was bits and pieces. And the TEFL was great for that, because it did provide an income for 10 years. I was never actually out of work, which is quite unusual in Bournemouth.
Yeah.
They lay people off in the winter.
Yeah.
It's not enough work. But I worked for 10 years without being out of work with that. But I did say to my girls, get a profession. You need to do something that you can say. When people ask you what you do, you can say, I'm a... So they both worked in music. And they didn't have a job title, so they couldn't say, I'm a anything. But now my middle child, my eldest daughter, is a head of an art department in Islington.
Yeah.
And the other one's a primary school teacher. So I'm proud of that.
Yeah.
They find teaching
they
quite,
got professions.
Quite hard. Yeah. But I always think for men, they would always have got a profession.
Yeah.
So my son, it wasn't this issue, because I don't think he would have been dependent on a woman. I just think, I don't know, that was advice I gave to them from my mum, but I think for me, a calculated risk, because I'm not a real risk taker. But
no,
I'm
not.
I've done some things.
I'm a scaredy cat.
Yeah, but I've done some things, well, you must be too. You've done some things that are risky, like setting up your business.
Yeah.
You know, I left a reasonably paid job. And
me too.
So,
Oh, thank you.
Thank you,
Carolyn. Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed the interview. Please come back soon. And it'd be absolutely brilliant if you could review the podcast on iTunes and also on thatsnotmyage.com. I know that sounds like a lot, but I would appreciate it very much. And don't forget, it's not about age, it's about style.